Hi, and welcome back to another episode of Secrets in Nature. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Lexi.
And we have a very exciting episode for you today.
A very eye-opening, exciting episode.
Yes. But before we get into it, I thought I would update you guys on my garden.
Yay! I want to hear about your garden.
My garden's doing pretty well, except the parsley died. So, I don't know. I think parsley is just hard to keep alive. I don't know what it is about it.
Wait, you know what I decided? I was making a quinoa bowl with parsley in it all week, and I decided that parsley tastes like Home Depot or like Lowe's. I don't think I like the bitterness of it. It reminds me of like licking the floor of Home Depot.
You've done that?
No, but like if I did, that's probably what it would taste like. So I feel like it's okay that your parsley died. Just keep the cilantro and the basil alive.
Actually, it was cilantro.
That died?
Yeah, I mix the two up.
How could you let the cilantro die?
It just was like, it was just weak from the beginning. I blame Lowe's. That's where I got it. Anyway.
Ironic.
All the other ones are flourishing. And then the bunnies ate my strawberry plant. And it's also infested with bugs, so.
Oh, no. Well, you're just a baby gardener, and you can only get better from here.
Yeah, all the other plants are doing great. I just can't wait for my cosmos to start flowering and for my lettuce to grow, because right now it's little tiny lettuce because I started from seeds.
Well, I'm excited to see where your garden is headed and see its very bright future.
Thanks. I'll be sure to give you some fresh veggies. Oh, we should talk about the fact that we are having a photo shoot.
I know. I am so excited because today we are having our first ever Secrets in Nature photo shoot. And the girl that's taking our photos, her name is Marissa. I went to college with her. She's very talented. And she's going to take some pics of Rachel and I in a field of wildflowers. And I'm so excited.
Yeah, I've never done like a photo shoot.
Me either.
Minus like my senior pictures.
This will be much more fun.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I think they're going to come out really good. And I think we're going to look so cute. Because you always look better in professional pictures. I feel like it's a confidence boost.
It's a confidence boost. And people will come to our Instagram page and be like, wow, these girls must be legit. Make sure you follow us on Instagram at Secrets in Nature Podcast to check them out.
All right.
All right.
I think we should
introduce our guest.
Yes.
So we interviewed Peter. He is one half of the owners of Ignite Sadhana, which we talked about briefly in the Alchemical Sisters interview because Ignite Sadhana does workshops there. But we got in touch with Peter and he agreed to come on for an interview to get more into the nitty-gritty of the wonderful world of Wim Hof. And it was such a good interview. I'm talking like within the first 10 minutes, we already got so like, we got down rabbit holes. I had like all my questions ready to go. And I was like going to ask him about how he came up with the name for his company, da 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 da. And we were already talking about like deep rooted issues in society within the first 5 minutes. It was awesome.
Yeah, like I couldn't even ask all my questions because like we were having such great discussions about other stuff. Like we were going off on tangents and I loved it. And of course, we talked about the Wim Hof method and cold exposure and yoga and kundalini and that kind of stuff, but also a ton of other things too.
Yeah, like we started off like he's, you know, he specializes in the Wim Hof method and kundalini yoga, and I have like a ton of questions about those just off the bat, but like we really dove deep and got carried away in other things, and it's just such a good conversation and I can't wait for you to hear it.
Yeah, those are really the best conversations when you just don't even know where it's going to go. It goes in all different directions.
We've been so lucky because, well, first of all, every guest we've had on the podcast has been so great. But like every single guest we've had on just is so excited and ready to talk. Yeah. Like everyone we've had on has just been so passionate and excited to like bring their topic up into the world and like bring light to it. And it's just been flowing lovely. So I hope that keeps happening.
Yeah, those are the best interviews to listen to when you can tell the person's passionate. All right, well, we don't want to make you wait any longer, so let's get into the interview with Peter.
Welcome to Secrets in Nature. We're thrilled to have you here. I'm sorry that your partner can't make it, but we're very excited to talk to you. And you are part of a duo called Ignite Sadhana. And I want you to tell me first off the bat what that means, what that term means.
So first off, thanks for having us. It's a pleasure, an honor. So sadhana actually, you know, I don't know, once you start kind of traveling down these paths of intuition and kind of just going with the flow of life, things kind of fall into place. So sadhana was a word that I found in a yogic text, and it pretty much means, you know, your path to wholeness, so your path to completing, or, you know, your path to God almost. So I saw that sounded good. And we threw on the Ignite, I guess, just to make it kind of commercial and kind of a little bit of esoteric words and a little bit of something that people could connect to. But the interesting part about it was, after we had come up with the company name, we went and did a 220-hour Kundalini training. And the idea of a sadhana is deeply embedded in Kundalini practice. So it kind of felt like this synchronicity that we got to see, because it must have been maybe the first day of training. It's like, all right, well, what you have to do is you have to find a sadhana. You have to do a sadhana and you have to stick to it. And what that is you choose, typically in the Kundalini practice, it's a kriya, but it's really just any practice that you commit to every day. So that could be brushing your teeth or flossing or something like that. But it's every day for 40 days. And if you miss a day, then you start those 40 days over. So when I first started doing the sadhana practice, it would, you know, I started off with a simple kriya, and, you know, day 15, day 25, something like that, you miss a day and then you're starting over. And there's this whole lesson involved in that, you know, this like discipline one, and then two, not beating yourself up about it. You know, we're all human. We miss days, but it's sticking to that process and really getting somewhere in that journey. It kind of was just something we chose, and then it ended up being something really important to us. So we both keep sadhanas at all times, more or less, whether it's an ice bath or a kriya.
Gotcha. So you chose the name, and then on the first day of this training, that word popped up for you guys.
Yeah.
Like right away. I love that. So
yeah,
it's like,
I really like the name.
Oh, thank you.
So it's like igniting the pathway.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess another reason for it was Wim Hof method, which is kind of the central focus of what we do. We do Kundalini and retreats, and we do fire walking and vinyasa yoga and all that stuff. But for me, that was what started my practice, was Wim Hof method. Like my journey was, that was the first thing. Like I had, you know, dabbled in all this stuff, yoga and, you know, spirituality, but it was really connecting with that element that got me like, all right, I need to go down this path and focus on a practice, whatever it might be. So to both of us, it was like, that might've been the starting point. And, you know, Wim Hof method is a real simple practice, but if it gets people in the door into understanding their body and connecting with their body and knowing that that's important, then hopefully that sparks the fuse.
Gotcha.
So how did you discover Wim Hof? And like, when, how long ago did you discover it?
I think, so what was that? Maybe like 5 years ago.
Okay.
At this point, maybe six, something along those lines. I was probably in a funk, you know, at the time I may not have realized it, but you know, it's we're more open and receptive to what the world has to offer us when we're in a funk. So I always tell people, students and such, that I'm like, that it's a good thing. If you're in a bad place, then usually, you know, there's something there for you. And, you know, hindsight's 20/20. Later on, you're going to realize that you wouldn't have found what you were looking for without it. So that, at least that's my experience. So my mom actually gave me a book about Wim Hof. It was a book by this investigative journalist called Scott Carney. And he was writing a book basically to debunk Wim Hof as a false guru, as this charlatan who's putting people in danger. He's doing all this crazy stuff, telling them they're going to reach transcendence through breath work. He's bringing up people up mountains with autoimmune disorders and things like that, you know, very unethical stuff is kind of the way he saw it. So the story goes, he meets up with Wim Hof. Wim invites him out to give it a try, and end of the day, he becomes a disciple of Wim Hof. So I guess being where I was at the time, I just booked a trip to the Pund, which is kind of like the Wim Hof Mecca, I suppose. That's where Wim Hof did all his early like trainings with, you know, whoever he was training with. And so I went out there and just did it all without, I didn't try the breathing or do a cold shower or anything like that. I was pretty much like, okay, I'm paying for this. Let's see if they can get me to do something that I really don't want to do. And sure enough, days into the retreat, we climbed the mountain in our shorts, and we were getting in the ice water, and we were doing the breath work and really connecting with the body. And that changed a lot for me.
Wow. Yeah, I can't wrap my head around walking in shorts in the snow. Like, I don't think I could ever do that, but like people do it. I watched a documentary on like a YouTube video, and the girl, she did that too. She was walking in the snow, I think in her bikini, and I was just like, that's crazy to me.
Well, that was my kind of feelings. Like, it's a bit like I read the book and I'm like, well, how'd they get that guy, the investigative journalist, from here to there? You understand it in your mind. Like, okay, they start, acclimatizing the body, they start doing breath work and, heating up their body maybe. But I don't know what degree of acclimatization or breath work is going to get me to climb a mountain in my shorts in February. But it's way more than that. I mean, I think it's our Western minds want to say like, okay, there's a pathway to it. There's like a formula on how to get there, a training regimen. But it's way more simple than that. It's just let kind of releasing to your body and letting these deep evolutionary capabilities just unlock. So really, it's just stepping into it. And that was the big lesson, that it's all in there. And we're always trying to figure out, like, how do we unlock it? How do we unlock it? You don't have to. You just kind of have to let it happen. And so, with any degree of commitment or desire to do it, anyone can really do this method, because we all can. And in our workshops, it's, probably 50% are like, oh, I just came for the breathing. I'm not going to do any ice bath.
Yeah.
And everyone does an ice bath, and everyone's successful. And the same thing with our retreats. People are. Don't think they're going to be able to do Maine in the winter, and they're all able to do it, because we all can. Like, it's all handed down to us in our bodies.
Yeah, I actually resonate with that a lot because I feel like a lot of practices that I want to start like incorporating, there's always something that's like, oh, I can't start a meditation practice until I have a meditation pillow. And I can't start doing this until I have this. And like, I feel like that's how we're wired, kind of. Like, there's always something that's going to be like, well, I need to like work my way there and like take the necessary steps. And so I really like that you say people just jump into it and they might think like, oh, I won't be ready for it. But then they are once they're in there.
Yeah, it's very modern, and it's very Western, and it's very we talk about it a lot, prefrontal cortex thinking, so we spend all this time in the front of our brain, analytical, trying to figure things out. And we like that part of our brain because it's done so much for us, and so much of our society is built off that. But this exercise and a lot of other exercises that aren't, propped up in our society are exercises of the maybe instinctual, or maybe the deeper parts of our brain, the reptilian mind. So we're trying to tap into that part of ourselves. And within that part of ourselves is, I think, like deep ancestral wisdom, maybe, because it works that much faster, and it's based upon what our body knows, not what our mind knows, if that makes sense. I feel like
Totally, totally. I also think it's interesting you said you were in like a very dark place when you kind of were introduced to this. And I feel like I've heard so many stories of like the spiritual awakenings coming when people are at rock bottom. So what is it that you think about being in like a vulnerable, dark place where there seems like there's no hope that opens us up to this?
I don't know. I can guess, but I know it's something. It's embedded everywhere. When you think of, like, Joseph Campbell's like Dark Night of the Soul, and when since then I've realized that most of our learning happens close to death. Whether it's psychedelic drugs, that's the ego feeling like it's close to death, letting go. I think cold exposure is the same thing. Your body's having this experience that it sees the cold as death. I mean, when you think about what's embedded in our biology, it's like our body's experienced the winter, the cold, as a time period of death. People died, they didn't have food, all that other stuff. So that's embedded into us.
It was like, I have to survive this.
So then in a survival state, you're more open to tap into the deeper reservoirs, maybe.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and so maybe those dark nights of the soul when we're really, really depressed, we're just open to more things. We're more if you're comfortable, and we talk about, a lot about comfort being this thing that stagnates you. There's no reason to move.
There's no
You
reason
have
to
to be.
change anything.
Yeah.
Why would you? Everything's good. Everything's perfect. So I try my best, and I try to speak it out into existence when things aren't good. Like there's something good happening here. We can just never see it because we're only seeing what's in front of our eyes. We can't see. But whenever we look back, we're like, oh man, it's good that that girl dumped me, or that I lost that. Whatever it might be, it's like, oh, that's perfect. But it's always beyond the scope of what we can see.
Yeah, it's like kind of similar to breath work and how like when you do the breath work and you're holding your breath and they say like that's where your intuition lies when you're depriving your body of the oxygen because your body's going to a similar state like how it might be in cold exposure.
Yeah, definitely. And so when you think about the fear response, I was talking about it with the cold, not having air, that must be even deeper, even more embedded into our physiology. Not having air and suffocating is like the deepest fear of all. So in our workshops, I'm like, if you can get your body relaxed enough during the breath work, during the breath hold, I don't know if you guys ever have done this breath work, to the point where you kind of black out a little bit, that
Not
means,
that kind of breath work,
yeah,
not
not
yet.
that intense.
then that means you must have gotten so relaxed that you got past that deeply embedded fear response. And that's, to me, a deep form of meditation, that you can go past all the physical things that keep you grounded and keep that are survival mechanisms, for example.
Yeah, when I did breath work, that's like the longest I could hold my breath was after doing a breath work. And like I didn't even think I could hold my breath for more than 30 seconds. So, and I held it for like a minute and 30 seconds. So I was like putting limits on myself. But really, I think when you get into that really relaxed state, it's like there's
Your
like no
body's just
fear.
capable of
Yeah.
more.
Yeah, like I feel like I read about it in like, Navy SEAL training or something like that. They talk about when you're swimming underwater and you start getting that response that you need to take a breath, you're at like 60% or something. You can still
Yeah, I've heard
feel
that too.
yards or something, but your body puts these parameters, for your safety,
To protect you.
to protect you. It's the same thing with physical exercises, I think. Sometimes like I teach yoga, that I'm like, now wherever your parameter is, that's something that's there to protect you. So you have to challenge it, not aggressively, not to the point where you might injure yourself, but you have to challenge those paradigms in your brain that say like, this is what I can do, because it's usually your ego doing a great job trying to keep you safe. It's there for a reason,
Yeah, I think that applies mentally and socially as much as physically. Like, there's so many things we do that is purely just our brains trying to protect us, our bodies trying to protect us. There's like social situations where we won't do or say things because it's like, if I'm not in with the crowd, then I'll be rejected. And then it's like survival conditioning. Like, I need a tribe. And there's so many limiting things, I think, that are just embedded in us. And it's, but it's just to protect us.
Yeah, and so these practices, you kind of get that message, right? And then you can take that message to social things. Like you're totally right, that need, that survival mechanism to be a part of a crowd is again another one of those things deeply embedded in our psychology and our minds to stay safe, because we're social creatures, and it's one of our greatest skills.
Yeah, but in today's world, we don't really need to like worry about that stuff for survival, but it's still like
It's still
ingrained in
embedded in
us.
us, yeah.
Well, I might argue with that, I mean, we don't on a superficial level, but truly, I think for our bodies to thrive and be healthy, I think we do need a tribe.
Yeah,
Yeah,
to be
well,
like their best selves.
it's not even like a tribe. I feel like it's also like I work for a corporate job. So it's like there's some things that's like, oh, if I do this and it gets back to this corporate job, I could lose my job and be homeless. Like there's certain things that really are still, I think, relevant to today. It's not like as prominent as it
Like
might have
life
been
and
in
death.
tribal times. Yeah, it's not life or death, but I think there is still a lot of, beliefs that we hold on to for sure.
Yeah, so it's different, but it's still there. And then I I tend to go down these rabbit holes and I start thinking like, well, the positive things you get from human connection. And I guess I thought about this a lot in the past 2 years, isolation and, how many people would be from all that. And so on the other side is how beneficial are hugs, eye contact, human touch, and things like that. And,
Pretty important.
yeah, studies, there's all these studies like talking to a plant and saying, nice things to a plant as opposed to yelling at a plant has these different
Or the
benefits.
water, or saying nice things to your water, like the Emoto experiments.
Yeah, so there's so then you start thinking like how important, how social are we, so think about how bad isolation is, but then does that make us thrive physically as opposed to just like, oh, I need people because I like people, but do you need it to be healthy? Do you need it for your body to thrive, for your cells at the molecular level to be, thriving, I guess?
Yes. So maybe it is realistic to have fears of losing your crowd, losing your tribe, losing acceptance. But maybe with the belief that we need to let go of is like, what will cause people to not accept me? Because I think that we have like very specific bullet points in society of like what's acceptable and what's not. And like the average, like especially now, I mean, when I messaged you, I do want to touch on this. When I messaged you, and I s mentioned how we've been interviewing all these South Jersey businesses that I didn't, e we grew up in South Jersey and I didn't even know they were there. Like, I didn't know like what South Jersey was capable of. Like, these people were blowing me away. Like, the Alchemical Sisters just being one example. So it's like, I feel like more and more like these bullets of what's acceptable, it's like fading away. It's like people are waking up on a whole new level. So I did want to ask you about that because you said, yeah, that area is really waking up. And I'd love to hear your take on why you think that is. Like, why now?
Well, yeah, I relate it to, I mean, it's like the Taoist belief that there's always equal opposite kind of opposing forces acting. So there's been a lot of negativity in the world. I mean, from all sides, from almost every spectrum, pretty much. And so maybe it's similar to what we were talking about earlier. When you're in this place to where you have to act, then people start, returning to what's really, really important because we were comfortable maybe the past 20 years or whatever. And now we got thrown into a place of a bit of discomfort. And now we're like, okay, well, now it's time to return back to community or return back to these modalities that connect us to our human selves, connect us to our spirits. And maybe before we didn't feel the need for that because we had all these distractions or we had all these things that were, maybe on a superficial sense, making us feel okay. But I heard a quote, someone say, filling up the infinite with the finite is what we've been doing. And now we're going towards these things that fill us up in this real, intrinsic sort of way. So it's almost like it's almost a matter of necessity because we're in this interesting time. And so people just start releasing their gifts because it's so necessary. And we're all open for it. So
Yeah, we need it.
yeah, definitely.
yeah,
I
so
think
it's like
people.
little fires lighting up kind of all over the place. I'm sure it's not just in South Jersey. I'm sure it's all
I
over.
know, I know. But it's like the place we grew up where we were like, this place sucks. And like, there's so much magic there, turns out. So that was beautifully said. And I really am glad that you put it into perspective like that for our audience, just because it's really is needed. And that's why I love that we're able to bring people like you and people like the Alchemical Sisters on here and share what you guys are doing.
Yeah, definitely.
It's exciting to see people become fully realized. It's like you have a friend and they have a gift and they're not using it and then they start using it. Then they start, I don't know, being a teacher or being, a speaker or whatever it might be, but it's so refreshing and then it encourages you and then everyone's kind of feeding off of each other.
Yeah, I love it. We kind of dove into things really fast, which I'm living for, but just to take it back a couple steps. So, just to be clear, did you start your business to bring the Wim Hof method to people in your life? Is that why you started it?
Yeah, I met Jason at a yoga teacher training, and it was right after I got back from Poland. I felt kind of on fire, you really got this deep connection, had this really intense spiritual experience. And there was a little synchronicity there, or just, you know, the universe guiding you, to where I was like, oh, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do a yoga teacher training. And then I realized I didn't have any money because I was in Poland and traveling and, you know, and paying for this expensive retreat. And then apparently I was a part of a class action lawsuit that that paid me out $3,000. Like, I didn't even know about it. The letter went to my mom's house and she just forged my signature and sent it back. And then around that time she called me. She's like, hey, you got a check for $3,000. And I'm like, perfect. So then it was there that I met Jason, and we were just kind of going down the path, and we did this Wim Hof method training, and we're like, okay, well, let's just start doing some workshops. And this is before anyone knew what this was. So we're going to different yoga studios, and we're like, hey, let us do this thing. We're going to do breath work, and then we're going to put people in ice tubs. And people for a while were just like looking at us like we were crazy. And it was around the time that Wim was on the Goop Lab that people started like really inviting us out, because he was on Gwyneth Paltrow's show.
Right.
But we kind of just wanted to see what was going on. You know, I don't know. We just kind of wanted to teach it, because we were already yoga teachers, and we're like, let's see how this feels, you know? And then the response was huge, especially we were doing it for a while, and then we stopped as soon as the pandemic started, and we were kind of feeling some trepidation about whether or not we should do some workshops. We're like, no one's going to come anyway, you know, like everyone's going to be like awkward and, you know, the whole thing. So then we're like, all right, we're going to do one outside. So we waited until the summer, like July 2020. And the response was huge, because people need this right now, because they felt so disconnected. And we were talking about us being social creatures. This is really like ends up being this really community building practice, because people, I think, because they go through this experience that the body interprets as a near-death experience, and they get through it together, and they all come out the other side, and they're really enthusiastic. So we've seen kind of these little communities spring up. One of the most notable is these ice women of New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you've seen them. So they have their own little group they're all awesome. We know them all. They've all been to our workshops. And so things like that, you know, community starts springing up. And then from there, we're like, hey, let's do a retreat. And then we started doing a retreat. And then we're like, I guess we need a name for the company. And then it kind of just, you just kind of follow the current. We didn't really have any plans for all this. And then we're just like, okay, I guess we have a company. And that's kind of how we ended up here.
And I've never heard of a green light so clear as, here's the universe just handing you $3,000. Like, no, really, you should do the yoga teacher training.
Yeah. I'm so glad I didn't like, oh man, let me go spend this on, I don't know. You know what
I
mean?
Yeah.
I want some clothes or something. I'm just like, all right, that's for that. It's so obvious that that's for that.
So you know? Obvious. Mm-hmm.
It's like almost the perfect amount.
Yeah. That's exactly how much that cost. Which
that's
is
insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Serendipity was the word that was escaping me earlier.
I love it. So I do want to talk about Kundalini, because that's actually something we have yet to talk about on this podcast. And it's fascinating. Very different than the yoga that the average person might have in their head. So why don't you give us like a very brief description of what Kundalini is and the benefits and the impact it can have on the body that's different than traditional yoga?
So we're hatha-based yoga. So most of the yoga we practice, you know, like vinyasa and ashtanga and all, Bikram, mm-hmm. all that comes from the hatha branch of the yoga tree.
Vinyasa is what people would probably normally think of.
Yeah, exactly. So Kundalini comes from the tantric branch. And so hatha kind of focuses on the physical. Or to me, I mean, you know, I don't want to offend anyone. But at least the way it's manifesting itself in this area and most of the West is it's physical is the primary thing. And then the spiritual stuff becomes like a secondary thing. With Kundalini, you're focused primarily on the energy that you're moving in your body. So it's very focused on the chakra system and creating energy in that chakra system and opening up kind of the pathways. So when you think of the chakras going up, you know, there's this path going up your spine and breaking down all the kind of the blockages that we create through our past, through our habits, through our, you know, samskaras and all that stuff. And opening up those blockages, squeezing energy up to our up to our head, pretty much to our higher chakras, the lower stuff being what connects to the physical, and then the higher stuff being what connects up to our higher selves. And oftentimes you have an experience, oftentimes you can get a little bit like connected, I'd say. Sometimes I just say it gets you a little high, which can be really interesting. But primarily, briefly, it's energy work. We're moving energy, and oftentimes it's very prescriptive as to what your body might need or what your spiritual journey might need. So whereas, in Hatha asanas, it's like, okay, well, this is good for opening up your heart, this, camel pose or something like that. Kundalini will have whole kriyas that are based around, you want to work on your heart chakra, this is it. You want to work on your endocrine system, this is what you do. So it's almost like, to me, it always feels like medicine. It's like, okay, what do I want to work on right now? And you're working on just massaging open these energy centers. And it's always kind of weird movements and weird asanas. But once you start doing it, you just start going into it with complete trust, because once you feel it and feel what Kundalini can do to your body, then you kind of just like, okay, I trust this practice. Like the kriya I'm doing right now, one of the asanas is you lay on your side and you roll around the floor for 3 minutes.
Every day for 40 days, you said.
I mean, that's one part of it. It's a whole set of, but the one part of it is getting on your floor and just rolling around
That
left to right.
sounds fun.
I mean,
Sounds like some inner child healing is what it sounds like.
a lot of it feels very playful sometimes.
Yeah.
It's an interesting practice. And I think people are, like we were talking about earlier, more open to the idea of the weirder esoteric stuff. So we've been getting a good response. We've been doing pop-up workshops where we'll do an hour Kundalini, and the second hour will be Wim Hof breathing, and we'll bring out a whole chakra set of sound bowls and do sound healing along with that.
So when you're doing Kundalini and there's an energy center that you or a chakra that you want to focus on, I don't know what the time frame typically looks like on how long you would work on it. I'm sure it's different for everyone. If I wanted to work on my heart chakra and I was working on opening that up and I hit a point where I really felt like it was open and the energy was flowing, like what does that feel like?
Sometimes it feels like you're losing control. Sometimes it could feel really, really peaceful and really relaxed. Usually it's right on the other side of discomfort, like we were talking about earlier. So a lot of, not all of the asanas in Kundalini are usually extended 2, 3 minutes, sometimes 11 minutes. And you get to this point where your ego wants to shut down your physical side. So a lot of it is this mind over matter thing. So for example, one of my favorite meditations to teach is, so you're going to sit cross-legged in Sukhasana, one hand like this and one hand straight up. Easy enough, right? And then a specific breath work, four short breaths in, one long breath out. But the catch is we do it for 21 minutes.
And you have to hold your arms like that.
So your arms are holding up for 21 minutes. The students don't typically know. It's just like, okay, we're going to do this thing.
They
This
don't
is
know how long you're saying.
Yeah.
well, we don't tell them how long. I mean,
Oh, God.
maybe some teachers do. We usually do this at our retreat because it's more in depth. But there's so much energy release to where you hit this point that every part of your entire being wants to get out of this position. Sometimes maybe the position might be like this or something like that, or maybe you're twisting, something very uncomfortable. And when you push past that, you kind of dissolve the ego, and it's there that we have these somatic releases, spontaneous emotions release oftentimes. Sometimes you might laugh, sometimes you might cry, but it can be very powerful, and it can manifest itself in a lot of different ways. It's the same thing with the breath work, the Wim Hof method breath work. We always kind of do this kind of warning section before we do the breath work. Hey, I just want to let you know a lot of things can happen to your body here. You might get really hot, you might get really cold, you might lose your hearing, you might, because I want people to know that whatever experience they have, whether it be emotional, physiological, or anything, is completely what your body wants to give you, because all you're doing is tapping into this deeper part of yourself past the mechanisms of control. And that's where, like I was saying earlier, it's this deeper wisdom that kind of releases, and your body begins releasing. You know, it's beyond what I understand, but what we really need, what needs to happen. And sometimes that's some emotions that are, tucked away, or deep in our limbic system that we're challenging and rewiring. So your question was, how does it feel sometimes when you start opening up those energy channels? It can be all over the map. It can be
Yeah.
it can be intense. It can be really peaceful. It can be really nice. And but either way, at the end of the day, it's good.
So it comes after you push past your discomfort.
Yeah, so we always try to tell people, like, you're gonna be uncomfortable when your whole being wants to stop. That's when you're right on the precipice of something great. So challenge yourself. We're not forcing anyone to do anything, but we're like, we encourage you to push, and we want everyone to have an experience here.
Yeah, and it's amazing how, like, no matter what it is, whether it's the Kundalini holding the positions, whether it's the breath work or it's the Wim Hof, no matter which one it is, like, you're always capable of doing more than you think. And, like, when you think you're, I'm like acting like I do this all the time. I've never done the Wim Hof method, but it's like just the stories I've heard and just holding my own breath, doing my own breath work, you're always capable of doing a little bit more when you think that you're at the breaking point.
Especially with the cold exposure. I would have no idea I could sit in a freezer for, how long I do. I have a chest freezer out back that, I hop into every 33 degrees. I'm like, why would I? Like, I feel like crazy. Like, if you would have told me 10 years ago that I would be doing this shit, then I'm like, why the hell would I do that? But
Yeah.
or
Do you
like, I
do it every
couldn't do that.
day?
There's no way. Probably not every day. I probably take an ice bath like 4 or 5 times a week, depending on, you get into flows. And but it's right out back. Most people who come to our workshops, they end up buying like a chest or a tub and then filling it with ice. For anyone who's interested, the best way, the most cost-effective way, is to get a chest freezer, like an ice cream freezer, which sounds crazy, and caulk the inside, fill it up with water, and then just plug it in until it's cold enough, and then you have ice water until it gets dirty, pretty much.
Do you work with heat exposure or only cold exposure?
Oh yeah, no, I love a good sauna, or sweat lodge is another good one.
So I want to talk about, I know we talked about a lot of the amazing spiritual experiences people can have on the other end of this discomfort, but I do want to talk about the physical benefits as well, just like what the cold exposure and the heat exposure. We can start with the cold exposure, just what can it can do for your body.
Yeah, I guess the one thing I will say is now I tend to look at everything with health and wellness, that it's all connected. So if your spirit's good, then your mind's better, and your physical manifests everything that's happening within you. So maybe that's a part of it. But we'll be very, specific about the things that cold exposure does to you. Cold exposure specifically is good for lowering your inflammation. And also the circulatory system. So one of the big processes that's happening when you get an ice bath is your whole body has to react, for example. So it goes into this survival state, and you get into the ice, and your body says, oh shit, like, it's getting cold. So we're going to send all the blood into our core, because your body's making this intuitive decision to protect your core organs. So it's like, okay, well, if I could lose a foot, I could lose my fingers and toes, but I can't lose these core organs, so I'm going to use all that warm blood to protect that part of my body. That's why when people get frostbite, their fingers and toes and feet fall off, because it's your body. Your body always makes smart decisions. There's always making split seconds decisions. So that process is sending blood all the way in, and then when you get all the way out, this beautiful process of, there's muscles that surround all your veins and your capillaries and all that stuff. They're getting this workout, and this has these effects long term on how your body operates from then going forward, sending, vitamins and whatever, blood, oxygen, everything throughout your body. So we get this funny question, or this funny fear in most of our, every once in a while in our workshops, people say so they have Raynaud's, or they have poor circulation. I can't do an ice bath because I have poor circulation.
That's me.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a crazy thing to think, but when you really think about it, you give it a second glance, it's like your body, again, making intuitive decisions based upon the environment that it exists in. Your body begins outsourcing capabilities and realizing that it doesn't need certain things. So if your body is like, okay, I don't need to know how to send circulation out to my extremities because I live in a temperature controlled environment, then it starts using that energy for something else. So when people say, oh, I have poor circulation, then I say, well then, you know,
you need this.
Your body doesn't think it needs this capability anymore.
Yeah.
So getting in the ice and getting out is going to start training yourself. Your body's going to adjust and say, oh shit, I got to remember how to do that thing again. You
That's
know?
So interesting. So if you have poor circulation, this is what you need to learn how to, so your body regulates itself.
Yeah, wow. Exactly. I wish I would have known that sooner.
Yeah. So my girlfriend has Raynaud's, for example, which is like real poor circulation in the hands. And since she started doing this, then obviously that sorts it out because your body adjusts. Your body, you know, does everything it can to survive. So it'll pick up, you know, connect certain patterns in your brain and pick up new skills and do everything it needs to. So yeah, that's one of them. The other one, I mean, honestly, in our workshops, the benefits we focus on are more about the breath work than the cold exposure. The cold exposure is great for circulation. It's great for inflammation. It's great on turning on your body. So it brings you to this sympathetic state. And in your sympathetic state, which is like this extreme fight or flight, your body begins to tap into your wellspring of energy. Kind of almost like it feels like a fountain of youth. So circulation, blood goes everywhere. Everything goes to your skin gets better, your hair gets better, all this different stuff. But the thing that they've studied the most, that there's most in terms when we're talking about kind of in this Western conversation, what science has studied is more so the breath work. So the big study that they did with Wim Hof was an endotoxin study where he was this crazy person who's climbing mountains in his shorts. He climbed Everest in his shorts and did all kinds of crazy stuff. And he starts making these claims that he can control his immune system. So your immune system is one of the autonomic systems that, you know, one of those things that your body just does without you thinking, you know, your heart beating or, you know, breathing and things like that. So he makes this claim. And finally, after doing enough crazy stuff, he gets some scientists to agree to test him. So they inject him with an endotoxin. It was essentially a dead E. coli bacteria. So it wouldn't have harmed him at all long term, but your body still registers it as E. coli. So your body goes through the whole process of inflammation. And most people would get severely ill for, I think, like 4 hours or something like that. So extreme flu-like symptoms, fever, nausea, the whole bit, throwing up. But he said through the breath work, he could fight that off because he believed he can control his immune system. So he injected him and no effects at all. Mm-hmm. So then they said, all right, well you're this guy who climbs Everest in his shorts, you do all these crazy stunts, you must be, you know, within the 1% of people who this doesn't affect. And he said, okay, well, give me a group of people and I'll train them in the method. So they got a control group. They said they'd give them 2 weeks. And if you've ever seen any interviews with Wim Hof, he's kind of like this wild man. After about 5 days, he's like, all right, they're ready. You know, he didn't even take the whole 2 weeks because that's who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing. They injected these guys with the endotoxin and little to no effects.
Wow.
So what they discovered was in our innate immune system, which is the part of our body that creates inflammation when anything comes into our body, it's this defense mechanism. We create inflammation in our body. And so, I mean, after studying this method and studying things around this method, so much of what we experience in the world today, creates inflammation. So every time we look at our phone, for example, it creates inflammation. Every time you eat food with bad chemicals in there, your body produces inflammation. Your body is constantly fighting things off. When you're sitting in a chair too long, you start producing inflammation. You know, stressors, you know, you're in the car, you're getting yelled at by your boss, you're not getting enough sleep, you know, the whole range of things that you hear about in the health and wellness community create inflammation. So that's one. The second thing is that we have all these different diseases and a million different names for all these diseases. And when you go down the rabbit hole, the root cause of them all, well, especially autoimmune diseases, are inflammation. So inflammation in your hands and your bones are arthritis. Inflammation in your brain is depression and Alzheimer's. Inflammation in the gut is Crohn's disease. And the list goes on and on. So one of the big messages we usually communicate in our workshop, or I guess it's just my own ideology or my own philosophy, is that we're not interacting with our environment the way we ought to be. So if the world has accelerated and changed our environment in the past, I don't know, 50 to 100 years, maybe we could say the Industrial Revolution, or maybe we could say the 50s and 60s, our biology hasn't evolved that fast. So your body's still expecting to experience certain things. Your body's not expecting to eat this much food. Your body's expecting to go through times of periods of famine and periods of feasting. Your body's expecting to maybe run from a predator, or your body might be expecting to grapple with the elements, maybe grapple with the cold, grapple with extreme heat. And so your body starts outsourcing all these things. Oh, I don't need it. Okay, boom, boom, you know, making adjustments. And so we're all coming out the other side with these inflammation-based diseases or sickness or autoimmune diseases, and they're kind of skyrocketing nowadays, right? You know, the rate is increasing, and it's been like a steady curve upward. And it's not that it's all of our genetics or anything like that. It's not that we've just been handed a bad deck of cards. It's that we're not interacting with our environment correctly. So anyway, I feel like I'm getting off on a tangent here. The breath work decreases that natural occurring inflammation in our innate immune system. And that's what the study showed. And that's the thing that I really like to hang my hat on, because I think that's what pervades our society more than anything else. For people who want to, you know, focus on performance and you know, working out and you know, looking good and staying young, all that stuff, it affects. But the most important thing, the most important benefit that this method has is decreasing inflammation and getting your body to flow and operate in this, in a more healthy, you know, kind of, I guess, trying to reach this place of homeostasis.
Yeah. That was so well said.
Yeah.
I've always known how beneficial it was, but that really put it into a new perspective for me. So thank you so much for that answer.
Yeah, and I definitely don't think humans are meant to sit for 8 hours a day.
Hell no.
So I hate that I have to do that 5 days a week, but...
Yeah, I always feel like I'm kind of going into this, like, crazy person thing where I'm like, oh, this is wrong, you know, this whole world is...
All the time, I know.
but part of that is true, and I'm not trying to encourage people to go live in a cave and become a hermit or anything like that, but
you could.
I mean that is an option, but I don't think people are going to do it. So it's like, at least let's know what we're up against and not act like all this is affecting us in a negative way. You know, it's really a hard thing to come to terms with. I think it's like when you think of the idea of cognitive dissonance, you know, where we don't want to see things that'll be kind of hard to deal with. I think a lot of us deal with that. And it's like, if I accept the fact that the world out there is really not, you know, healthy environment for me, then I then have to start adopting all these other ideologies. So, you know, I always try to kind of level with people, like, just start doing some practices that balance it out, because you're swimming against the current, I guess, is kind of the way I see it.
Yeah, it's better to talk about it than pretend it's not happening.
Yeah.
That was so well said. I just want to very briefly touch on heat exposure. And I'm assuming that the most obvious benefit is that it makes you sweat, and sweating is very important, and it gets rid of the toxins. But is there anything else you would like to add, just in terms of, like, the benefits of heat exposure?
I'm not an expert on heat exposure. We just, we mix it into our retreat. A retreat in Maine, there's like a classic wood burning sauna right in the middle of the property. And we do, you know, we get that up really hot, probably like 200 degrees. And then we bring people out into the cold and back and forth. There's a ton out there on all the benefits of sauna. One of my favorite stats for the sauna is people who sauna 3 times a week are less likely to die of all causes. All causes mortality. It's like, Well, I don't know what that means, but but I really love the stat, because it sounds like if you're the kind of person who wants to take a sauna 3 times a week, then you're better off in general.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But get like the heat shock proteins, you release all the toxins. And I think it's I think it's similar. It's getting close to that place of discomfort. If you've ever been in a really, really hot sauna, you really kind of push yourself to the edge and I don't know, just release it all. So, but yeah, I don't want to act like I'm an expert on that. We do it on our retreats and I like going to the Russian bathhouse and doing the whole hot cold thing there. But yeah, I don't know specifically the science behind it. Although we do fire walking on our retreats, but there's no real physiological benefit to that. It's just mind over matter stuff.
Right, like training your minds.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I will say, because the gym that I go to has a sauna, the gym that my boyfriend and I go to, and one time he said he was sitting in there for a really long time, and when he came out, it was like ice cold because the air conditioning was so pumped up, and as soon as he like left the heat for an extended period of time, he said like he felt high, like after like the cold hit him. So I don't know if that's the kind of thing when you say in your retreat you guys go back and forth between the hot and the cold. I don't. Is like going from one state to the other also part of it?
And that high feeling that you get, you'll get that a lot because not only is it going from hot to cold on our retreat, we're going from extreme hot to extreme cold, December, pain, and we're getting in the stream. So the stream is might even be below 32 because it's moving water, and it's coming down from the mountain. So it's really cold water. So we hop in there for, 30 seconds to a minute, and then go back in there, and I'll get out of the stream and get back in the sauna that the thermometer on the wall says is what, 190 degrees or something like that. And it doesn't feel hot at all for.
It probably feels really nice.
Yeah, it just feels like nothing. Like it's not hot enough in here, actually. So I tend to think with practices like that, you're increasing the plasticity of your nervous system. So, I mean, not to keep on going back to the modern human experience, but our range of experiences of what our bodies feel, of what our nervous system feels, is usually like right here. So the more we expand them and the more we kind of vacillate between the two, the more your body's able to move back and forth. So one of the things that I noticed early on practicing Wim Hof method was my body having the ability to regulate its body temperature better. So going from hot to cold and cold to hot. It's like have you ever heard of heart rate variability? That's
No,
like
I don't think so.
one of those popular things that functional wellness people are into. It's basically that, but with your heart rate increasing, when we do things like this. So cold exposure increases heart rate variability, as does sauna. So your heart's adjusting to go into this extreme cold and go into the extreme heat. So then on a regular basis, it kind of knows where to operate a little bit better. So your heart should always kind of be adjusting to where your nervous system is and where your environment takes you. But if it doesn't have that skill, again, it's like the thing that we were talking about with Raynaud's and circulation, that if your body never had a need to learn that skill, then it doesn't have it. So the more we increase that, then it operates at a higher functioning capability and has more range of motion, I guess, for the yogis out there and the movement people.
This reminds me of when I was a kid and someone would have like a hot tub connected to their pool at night. I would like jump in the pool and then jump back in
Yeah,
the
you
hot
go
tub
back
and
and forth.
yeah, and it felt like so good.
Yeah, and it's one of those things like kids always do like shit like this just naturally on this innate. It's just always know what to do, right? And then we turn like 13 and then we're too cool to do any of that, and then we turn adults and we need to find some like really deep reason to do it. But kids just do it.
Kids are way more in tune. They just know what's up from the beginning, and then society like knocks it out of them.
They're probably more in tune with their bodies too.
It's like my kriya where I'm rolling around the floor. Just do that.
My inner child wants to roll around the floor or like roll down a grassy hill.
Oh, that was one of my favorites. Sideways, rolling down a grassy hill.
Yeah, it would make me itchy after, but I had fun doing it, so it didn't matter.
I think you're right, Rachel, though, that you're more connected with your body as a kid, that you're only experiencing your body and you haven't gotten that disconnect yet.
Yeah, less conditioning.
Yeah, so you're going with intuition and you don't know you're going with intuition, but you're always just like, so if a kid says they have a certain feeling, like the heebie-jeebies about someone or something like that, and it's like I'd probably trust the kid because they're more in tune than we are. unless like something else is guiding that, you know. But yeah, there's something special there. And so and a lot of the gurus and the spiritual texts that you end up reading into, it's all about going back to learning how to become a kid again.
I just wanted to ask, in your Instagram bio, it says level 2 for Wim Hof. Like, what do the different levels mean?
It just means you've been doing it for a while.
That's, okay.
Yeah.
How much more intense is it?
Nah, I mean, we just had to do like a, it's really not that intense, honestly. We just had to do like a training with them, you know. I think we had to become level 2, I think we had to have been teaching it for over a year, have taught a certain amount of workshops, you know, so a certain amount of experience, and have like a high rating on their platform, like above 4 stars or something like that, and then pass a test which with like other knowledge about the method, like the science, you know. They really value the science, the Wim Hof people, you know, the people that run that platform, because it was kind of what put them on the map. And they realized that like Wim is like a crazy spiritual dude who just goes with his body and just goes with what he feels. But when I think about his journey and him climbing mountains and trying to convince people that they need to tap into their bodies and doing it for years, I just imagine how many people are like, dude, you're crazy. Like, what the hell are you talking about? You're going to climb Everest, what, you're going to die. You know what I mean? And so us being Westerners and, you know, having the conditioning that we have, we, for better or for worse, we need science to back things. Even, you know, like, we don't have faith in things anymore. We're like, all right, give me the proof. Give me the proof. Mm-hmm. So there's video of when they did that endotoxin study, and Wim cried afterwards because he knew how important it was. He knew that this was going to make people realize that he was on to something, and that they need, you know, and that's what we need. So they teach us a lot of the science, and they like focusing on that. So I love to learn more science, pass a test, that sort of thing. Just means I've been there for a while, I guess. maybe it'll make more people come to workshops and more people do ice baths or trust me more, or, you know.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
So we're closing in on the hour mark. I don't want to hold you much longer, but please tell everyone where they can find you in the world, on social media, how they can come to a workshop. Let them know where they can find you.
So we're constantly doing workshops. We're usually just popping up in different places. People invite us out pretty much, and we just kind of go where people call us. Where we post all of our workshops and all our events and in clear, concise places on our website, and that's ignitesadhana.com under the events page. So ignite, you know how to spell. Sadhana is Sadhana. We have some workshops coming up. The big things that we have coming up are this weekend, which obviously people aren't going to go to that because we're recording it today. We're doing a camping event in Tamaqua. And I'm mentioning it because I think it's a good time. And I think we're doing another one in September.
Oh, you do camping events?
Yeah. So this is like kind of a mini retreat that we do, which for people who don't want to spend money on, you know, going to Maine or Yellowstone with us. This is like, so people will get there Friday night. We'll do some breath work. Camp out. It's this really kind of magical place over in Tamaqua, PA, where they're kind of one of those little places, one of those little fires of like spiritual explosion happening. They do all these really cool events. It's called a Stonehenge. So we're doing an event there this weekend. We'll do a fire walk. We'll do Wim Hof method. We'll do Kundalini. They cook for us, and the camping scene is really nice, and it's really peaceful. Then we have a retreat in Yellowstone National Park late October. We're really excited about that one because we haven't done one out west yet. And then in December, we have our retreat up in Maine, which I think this is our 6th one. We've done a bunch of these. They're always a good time. Everyone stays in little miniature yurts and cabinets. So they're like about 2 to 3 people in a yurt, and you heat the place up by, you know, with wood. There's a wood burning stove in there. So it has that kind of rustic feel. People are always worried that they're going to be cold the whole time. A lot of the time you're warm. You know, there's a heated yoga room. Your yurt gets really hot if you throw enough wood in there. And then there's the sauna, and the food there is great too. And then between now and those, our winter events, we just have pop-up workshops all over the place. We do little Kundalini workshops too, which are, like I was saying earlier, like an hour Kundalini, half hour breath work, and sound healing. And then we got other stuff, other weird stuff going on. At least one of the Wim Hof method workshops. I know, Rachel, you were talking about breath work. What kind of breath work did you do when you were doing those breath holds?
It was only like 5 minutes of breath work, but it still made like a big difference. Yeah, I haven't done any like long
I know what it was
breath works.
called. It was, I did it too. It was called Awaken with an O. I think they're
Yeah, I know.
Australian, if you're familiar. And it was like a very short, like it's called Awaken Daily. And it's just like a very few minutes of breath holds.
All right, right on. Yeah, I've been wanting to try that breath work because I've been seeing them pop up everywhere, but
Like Megan Fox is like working with them now. I'm like, at least she's like gonna bring it into the mainstream, maybe. So that's cool.
yeah, nah, they've been all over the place. They're like a big deal. And I'm wondering, like, all right, what's their breath work like? I should just find out.
It was like 10 breaths, hold for 10 seconds, 20 breaths, hold for 20 seconds, 30 breaths, hold for a minute and a half. So it was like very simple and like easy to chew and like do on my own. But I would love to try like the more in-depth breath work with like a guide or a practitioner. I don't know what they're called. I would love to try something like that. So I'm gonna be on your website looking.
Yeah. Feel free to reach out if you have any questions or, you know. But yeah, we'd love to have you. Yeah, I'd love to share it with you, and we'll have you probably hold your breath for over 2 minutes.
That would be cool.
That would be cool. That'd be a cool thing to say you were able to do.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. This was an amazing conversation and I can't wait to share it with everyone. Maybe you can come on again in the future and I can't wait to work with you, hopefully.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's really nice to meet you too.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on.